May it please the court, my name is Eric Dorsho, and I represent the appellant claimant. Assisting me with the argument today is my associate, Thomas Lackey. This is an appeal from the Superior Court's decision that held that a employment accident was not in the course and scope of employment. And the facts are as follows. On January 14, 2011, my client, the appellant Mary Spellman, was working as a home health aide, visiting nurses, Christiana visiting nurses, and she had been so employed for 18 years. She used her own car, paid for her own gas, and on occasion she got reimbursed for mileage. Sussex County was her area of operation. The issue dealt around the second patient that she saw on that day, Mr. Lordy, who lived in Ellendale. She arrived at Mr. Lordy's house and provided personal services for him. As a home health aide, she would help bathe and do some other things, straighten up around the house. She arrived around 9:15, and at 10:30 she was completed her job for that day. Under the processes and procedures that she had with the employer, she used telephony through her cell phone to punch in exactly what services she rendered, and then she clocked out for that day.
And the reason for the day?
Not for the rest of the day, just for a period between 10:35 and noon, which was the period of time that she had her third appointment of the day.
Noon was the third
appointment. Noon, and that was a Mr. Harris that lived in Lincoln.
But in the meantime, for that hour and a half, as I understand it, she was going to stop off at home briefly and then go to her doctor's appointment, after which she would go to the 12 o'clock appointment.
That is correct, Justice.
And she was not being compensated for that hour and a half, nor were her expenses being reimbursed.
That is correct. That is correct. She had a little bit of free time. She wanted to go home and freshen up. She had a doctor's appointment at 11:40 and then was scheduled to see another patient, a Mr. Harris, in Lincoln at 12 noon. As she left the house, about 10:35 on that day, and Mr. Lordy, about 1.1 miles down the road, she was involved in a serious one-car accident where she was seriously injured.
So what is your position? Is it because it's an hour and a half, or if it had been 3 hours, would the outcome be different? If it had been 4 hours, would the outcome be different?
Well, Justice Risley, we're actually relying on your case of the Divine decision that you decided when you were president judge of Superior Court below. We feel that this is on all fours, very similar to Divine. In Divine, Your Honor decided that the fact that Mr. Divine had been clocked out was not relevant, and the fact that Mr. Divine was not getting mileage was not relevant in a situation where there's a semi-fixed place of employment, as we have here, a traveling nurse. So in other words, what Your Honor had decided previously, the coming and going rule, which is a normal rule that we apply in workers' comp, simply really doesn't have any applicability here. When you have a traveling...
Well, what is the rule if it isn't coming and going?
Well,
Can you articulate it in a sentence?
Yes. Basically, the travel is the job. I think in a traveling employee situation, that is the rule. When you have someone who is a traveling employee who is providing services to the employer to go to this Mr. Lordy's house, okay, that person is there, and it's the employer who is responsible if that person gets injured on the way there and also on the way home. Because we're talking about someone who is put in a hazardous situation, being on a road in a very rural area.
Okay, and so under the traveling employee doctrine, as you've articulated it, there will never be a time except when the car is parked at home, the employee will not be within the scope of employment. No matter what she's doing, no matter how personal, no matter how unrelated to the job.
Well, there are a couple of responses I'd like to make. I would not say never, because you're going to hear in a couple of moments from my...
If you're on the job, that is acting within the scope, either going to the first work assignment from in the morning or going from the last assignment to home in the evening. What else is left?
Well, there are periods of time as a traveling employee where a person is not going to be paid for their time and not going to be paid for their mileage.
Like this case.
Like in this case. But the point is that that travel is part of the job. So they're asking her to travel to a rural area in Sussex County. It had snowed the night before. The risk of responsibility is with the employer. They can't simply drop her in there. And to continue on with the exception, I mean, if they were to fly a helicopter in and fly her home in a sense, and they're going to take that responsibility away from her for that travel, that's one thing. But they're telling her, use your car, you know, pay for your gas, pay for your insurance.
I'm sorry.
Can I just interrupt because I'm unclear about something? The traveling employee exception to the going and coming rule, does that also apply to the first trip out in the morning and the last trip home at night?
I would argue under the Vine case that Justice Ridgely decided, yes, that would be the holding of that decision. I'm going to ask at this point, however, if my associate Tom Lackey could come forward with the court's permission, because there are alternative arguments here dealing with Larson's.
Before you get to the alternative arguments, is it fair to say that the traveling employee exception, which is one of the alternatives that you're relying on, is for this court a matter of first impression?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. There are Superior Court decisions that have discussed this.
Bedwell, right? Which was decided after Devine?
There was Bedwell that was decided after Devine. It also is a Superior Court decision. This is a case of first impression for the court, as far as I know.
Is the law as stated in Bedwell correct, in your view?
That absolutely is correct, Your Honor. And we think that Bedwell applies. Let me back up. I'm responding to Devine. The law as stated in Devine is correct. The law in Bedwell dealt with a different situation slightly, where there was a personal convenience situation. But again, the court in Bedwell talked about your decision in Devine and agreed with it, and we agree with the Bedwell decision and the reasoning. That also talked about a semi-fixed place of business.
But Bedwell goes on to say that injuries reasonably related or incidental to the employer's business are compensable, and personal deviations from the employer's business can be beyond the scope of this rule and therefore do not arise out of the course and scope of employment. And that really the focus is on whether there's an intent to abandon the job temporarily and whether that may be inferred. Is that an accurate statement of the Bedwell rule?
I think that would be accurate. On the other hand, and what Your Honor had stated in Devine, I think also talks about this type of situation. We're talking about 1.1 miles from the last point that she had to assist the patient. She's going on the same route whether she's going to go home. She's going on the same route whether she's going to her next appointment,
right,
Mr. Harris.
But the issue is whether that fact is determinative or whether the purpose of going on the same route is determinative, because the purpose is different, even though the route may be the same. And just before you sit down, do I correctly understand that under the traveling employee doctrine, as you argue it, except in the case where the employee is at home asleep, and the car is parked in the driveway, whenever he or she is driving the car, the employee would be within the scope of employment.
Under the Devine decision, it's our position that to the point that she got home that night,
yep,
it would be under an employer-employee workers' comp situation, because they're the ones who put her on the road.
Okay.
And we feel it's a key difference between the normal fixed place of business and a semi-fixed place.
And that's the rule that you're arguing for?
That would be, yes, Your Honor, it would be. And if, with the court's permission, I'd like to call on Mr. Lackey at this time to address some of the other mixed purpose doctrine that we're arguing.
That's fine. You're in, already into your rebuttal time, so you're welcome to use it.
Okay. Well, I'll ask Mr. Lackey if he could come up for a moment and address Larson's and the Nissan decision for a moment or so.
Thank you. May it please the court, I will very briefly present appellant's alternative argument. In the event that the court does not find that the Devine decision is controlling here, which of course held that trips to and from the first and last appointments work in the course and scope of a traveling employee's employment, we would ask that you find that the injuries or compensables having taken place during a trip of mixed purpose, one that served both a personal aim as well as advancing the employer's business interest. Our workers' compensation laws have a long history of acknowledging that trips taken can have two purposes, and Children's Bureau versus Nissen, subsequently adopted by this court in Storm versus Carl Mill, the court acknowledged that and declared that the question is whether the employer exposed the employee to the risk and that service to the employer must at least be a concurrent cause of the injury. Here we would argue that the very fact that she left the patient's house is part of the service to the employer. As a visiting nurse, it is understood that she will arrive and perform service.
Is the mixed purpose doctrine one that this court has addressed?
It has, yes.
Okay. Secondly, doesn't that require that at the time of the accident there were two purposes that were coinciding? That is, that were being pursued at the same time.
It does, Your Honor. In addition to, of course, going home.
And if that's the case, isn't this case distinguishable because, during this segment of Ms. Bellman's day, there was only one purpose, and that was personal?
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree and submit to you that part of her services and the services that employer was able to offer was that they would go, that a traveling nurse would go to the home of a patient, provide services, and that's the those are the express services. However, implied is that at the end of the appointment, the visiting nurse will leave, and that they have not, in fact, hired someone who is to provide round-the-clock care for which they would need to provide board or other services. It is an express part of the business service that they leave at the end of it. And this is something that enables the employer to serve multiple patients with fewer nurses and within particular price points without having to take on additional cost and charge additional costs for round-the-clock care.
But I thought the philosophy or the rationale behind the mixed purpose doctrine is that if the employee is actually pursuing two purposes at the same time and the accident occurs and it's impossible to sort them out, then the policy of the Workers' Compensation Act tilts in favor of the employee.
Yes,
in favor of coverage.
In favor of coverage, yes. It's been the position of this court that exceptions to the going and coming rule are to be construed broadly in favor of compensability where it is appropriate. Our position would be that, again, by leaving, she served the employer's interests, and as such, it is mixed-purpose travel, and we'd ask that it be found compensable as a result.
You want to save the remainder of your time?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Maria Newell, and I'm here on behalf of Visiting Nurse Association today. I would like to point out to the court that this court has addressed this very issue in two decisions, Coates versus Murphy, which is 270 Atlantic 2nd 527, and Clow versus Cumley, which is 925 Atlantic 2nd 477. Both of those cases dealt with traveling salesmen and the going and coming rule. And one case, the first case, the person was on a lunch break with their wife and found not compensable because they were on a personal errand. The second was at the end of a shift, end of the day, agreed that the shift had ended and the work had ended and the person was traveling home. In both cases, compensability was denied.
Are these cases cited in the briefs?
To tell you the truth, I'm not sure. I know that the Clow decision was cited in before the Industrial Accident Board, handed up as an exhibit and should be part of the file. And the Murphy, the Coates versus Murphy, was actually cited in the Clow decision. So. But the decision about whether or not someone is in the course and scope of their employment is a factual finding. And it was the board's factual finding that the claimant was not in the course and scope of her employment. Whether you're in the course and scope of your employment is a decision that comes before you even get to going and coming, before you even get to traveling employee. Were you working? Were you benefiting your employer at the time of the accident? The board's factual findings in this case was that the claimant wasn't on a special errand. She wasn't on a dual or mixed purpose. She wasn't on a short personal comfort stop. She was not traveling between clients. She was not continuously on call. There was no urgency or unusual time or trouble to her work. In this case, it's determined to be a highly factual question whether a person is in the course and scope of employment, and you must look at all of the circumstances. The board, after hearing all of the evidence, found that this claimant specifically blocked this time out. And it's not merely the fact that they were off the clock, because someone could clock out, walk out into your parking lot of your job, fall, and still be covered.
I think we understand the facts, and I don't think they're contested on appeal. So the real issue is, what is the rule that ought to be applied?
Well, the real issue is, the rule is whether you're in the course and scope of your employment. If you're not, you don't even have to get to going and coming.
And
you don't even have to get
that. You know, the appropriate rule has already been articulated in two Supreme Court decisions.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I think you're also telling us that the dispositive rule, the rule that we ought to follow, has already been set forth in two Supreme Court decisions.
I believe that's correct.
I can't locate them in your brief.
Yes. That is partially because we spent so much time responding to their arguments and what was brought in their brief. It wasn't until I went back to my folder in preparing for this that I found all the legal research, including the exhibits I handed up at the IAB, which was the Clow versus Cumley decision. Both the Superior Court level and Supreme Court were admitted and handed up to the board as part of the closing argument. But
did the board cite these cases?
No, they did not. Because, again, they went to not in the course and scope of employment, not the going and coming and traveling employee exception, which reminds me, in the Devine decision, that case is entirely distinguishable from this case, because if you recall in that decision, they specifically said that if there was an identifiable point in time and space where employment began, then that traveling employee exception wasn't necessary. The traveling employee exception comes into play when you have someone where you really don't know, maybe they're a salesman and they have different clients, you don't know which ones they're going to, when they set their own schedule, they go to their own locations, and it's unclear. There would be an arbitrary line to say, here's when their employment began. But in this case, there was a specific agreement that this person's workday began when they arrived at their first patient. And let's not forget, their schedule was set the week before. They call in. They know where they're going, what places, what patients they're going to see at what times. And it's in the handbook that the going and coming rule applies, which is when you leave your home to the first location, you are not covered. When you leave your last location and go home, you're not covered. That's a standard going and coming rule. In between, when you're traveling as part of your job, as a visiting nurse or a home health aide, you are covered. And that's when they're clocking in and out of the system.
And so you divide up the day's travel into segments.
Correct.
And you characterize each segment. That is it business related or is it personal?
Right. And that's what the materials that were handed up in the brief as Larson's discussed, that you would label the various legs of the trip, whether you're going and coming. So in this case, she knew specifically where she was going to work, and she specifically asked for a period of time to be locked out vacation time. She just didn't have any vacation time, so she didn't get paid. So it was unpaid leave. And during the unpaid leave, while she is not on a pause, not on personal comfort, she's literally saying, you can't call me, you can't send me the patients, I'm not in your custody or control, I'm not going about your business, I'm going about my business, this accident occurred. So that's where this Devine case is different from the case we're talking about, because she had removed herself from the course and scope of employment.
Just a quick question. I know this is not what happened here, but what if she had been injured after going to the doctor and when she was on her way to her next appointment?
I believe that under this, I believe that would be compensable, because she's going, the purpose for her trip, the labeling of that leg of the trip was business. She's on her way to the next thing. And the mere fact she hasn't clocked in, or the mere fact she's not being paid under VNA, I don't think that prohibits her from getting workers' compensation.
Okay, so the purpose is what?
It's the purpose.
Of the segment, and, excuse me, the purpose right. of each segment is what is determinative,
right.
at least in your view.
Right, and sometimes, unfortunately, it's unclear because there's conflicting histories as to what the purpose was. But in this case, the purpose is clear. And in that Bedwell decision, it also said that all injuries on the road are not compensable. Only those reasonably related to the employer's business are compensable. The Workers' Compensation Act does not cover traveling employees at all times when they are not in their homes, only when they are engaged in acts reasonably incident to their jobs. So again, in this case, the mere fact that she happened to be traveling on the same road she would have had to travel doesn't matter. When she left that home at 10:35 a.m., she could have gone north, south, west, east. She could have sat in that park in outside on the street all day if she wanted till her next appointment. She could have traveled anywhere, had lunch, gone shopping. She was no longer in the control or the custody of the employer and no longer going about the employer's business.
Now, the board applied the rule in Bedwell, correct? Applied the case law, Bedwell?
Yes.
And was that correct or not?
Yes, because you're not covered at all times. And they specifically, in looking at the totality of the facts, said all these facts add up to the fact that she wasn't working. She wasn't in the course and scope of her employment. She
Bedwell
had removed
in any way inconsistent with Coates or Plow, which you've identified for the first time at this oral argument?
No, because Bedwell stands for the premise that you're not always covered and that you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. And both of those other cases looked at the totality of the circumstances and looked at the purpose and said that the coverage did not exist, just as the board did in this case. And I want to make it clear, because there's some public policy arguments that were made, that I'm not saying, nor I don't think any employer is saying, that just because you're paid for mileage or not paid for mileage, that in and of itself is dispositive of your right to worker comp benefits, because there certainly are traveling employees who are not paid for mileage. However, when you are paid for your mileage and then you're not being paid at that moment, is that not in and of itself, if it's a presumption that when you're being paid, you're covered by worker comp, if you are entitled to mileage reimbursement and you're on a leg of a trip where you're not being paid, doesn't that in and of itself say I'm not in the course and scope of my employment? Otherwise, I would be getting mileage because my employer pays mileage.
One of the problems, you know, with the way the case has been briefed is that we seem to be thrown a menu. If you don't like this theory, try that one.
Yes.
What we're searching for, at least what I'm searching for, is some coherence. I thought that what you were arguing was that if the purpose of the segment of the trip, at least in the mind of the employee, or as an undisputed fact, is business, which it was, which it would have been had it been a trip from the doctor's appointment to the next client, then it doesn't, you're right, that would be determinative in whether or not Ms. Pellman was being reimbursed for her mileage may not matter. But if she is reimbursed for her mileage, that's additional evidence that even the employer believed that it should be compensable.
Correct. And the same is true the opposite, which is if she's not demanding to be reimbursed for this mileage, she's not getting it, she's not asking for it, then does not not tell you that she 100% understood that this was not within the course and scope of her employment and she was about her own personal business?
I don't know what it tells me. That's the problem. You know, we're trying to determine what the rules are and asking whether they're easily administratable or that they are. Do we end up having just a patchwork of exceptions?
Well, I think that the case law needs to change with the times. And when these decisions were rendered, there wasn't GPS. There wasn't this telephony clock-in system where as soon as you got to a premises, you could clock in. And there's certainly a difference between maybe a salesman, like I said before, which has no specific set route that he has to follow. He may choose to go client ABC today, DEF tomorrow, and reverse the order the next week. But in these cases where an individual has a set schedule where they're supposed to go, who they're supposed to see, so there's no question when they're on the road heading in this direction, they're going to point A. When they're heading in the road on this direction, they're going away, or things like that. And they have GPS and they have clock in, we need to evolve with that. And therefore, you go back to the Bedwell decision that just because you're a traveling employee doesn't mean you get a benefit that every other employee who commutes to and from work doesn't get, which is you're covered leaving your home to your first job and leaving your last job to going home. And that is a point I totally disagree with, regardless of the case law, I must humbly say, that why should your last leg or first leg of your trip be covered when no other employee's trip is covered? And that's because sometimes you can't identify where is that first point where their job started for the day so that, you know, coverage begins. In this case, we know when coverage begins. It was when she arrived at the first location.
So if it's unclear, that is, if the nature of the work makes it unclear, you know, when coverage begins, that is mixed purpose, then I gather that, you know, the coverage wins out. That is, the uncertainty is resolved in favor of coverage because of the policy underlying the Workers' Compensation Act.
I would have to agree with that, yes.
But when the purpose is not mixed, that is, when it's clear what the purpose is, then that doctrine doesn't apply. And you can apply the going and coming rule, but not solely within the context of going home or leaving home and going to work, but also intermediate trips that are taken during the workday.
Yes, and that is where they have indicated that if you leave your employment and the period of time is so long as to be the temporary abandonment of that job, then you can't expect the employer to still be responsible for your coverage. And in this case, by saying, I'm off the clock, I want vacation time, I'm going to a doctor's appointment, don't call me. And matter of fact, let's not forget in this particular case, she had 5 patients scheduled that day originally. They changed and took away patients during that period of time so that she could attend her doctor's appointment. So this is even, they accommodated her schedule, removed work duties. She said she was unavailable, and that's when this accident happened. Thank you. Thank you.
I suspect you know where we're going to start. What about those 2 Supreme Court cases?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I have not reviewed them. I checked with Mr. Lackey. We don't have those decisions, and it's not cited in the brief. I have not seen them. I do not believe that they were relevant, as we did searches of cases on these issues in preparation for the brief. So I don't know what those cases say, and I apologize, but I can't address them. They weren't addressed in the briefs at all. I've never seen them. If I could spend a moment on Larson's, I believe that the mixed purpose doctrine and Larson's provides a little bit of guidance because there's a point of deviation. Justice Jacobs, when you asked about is this an open-ended rule I'm seeking? Larson's talks about a point of deviation in each trip, breaking it up into that segment. And here, the point of deviation wouldn't have happened on going eastbound on this road.
Well, the question, I think I know where that's heading. The question is whether the point of deviation is a physical point or whether it's, it reflects an inner state of mind, that is purpose. Clearly, there was a deviation if the criterion is purpose, because when the accident took place, she was going on a personal errand. But by the same token, even because she was would have taken the same route, you know, at the point where the accident occurred, there may not have been a physical deviation.
If I could, I'm being told to stop it. With the court's permission, if I could just
answer this question.
Thank you. It's not a state of mind that Larson's talks about. It's a objective standard. Where on the road is the deviation to go home? At that point, going home would have put her in a non-business situation. We were several miles from that point of deviation. So it's an objective standard, I would argue.
So under that test, we would have to determine, there would have to be some factual inquiry into when, where she would have had to turn off that road in order for the trip to be non-compensable?
Yes, Your Honor, and there is testimony in the court below on this. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments. We'll reserve decision and take a recess.